Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Volt here, and joining me today is a man who needs no introduction, but I'll give him one anyway, Mr. Cameron Harold. So Cameron is a speaker. He's the founder of the COO Alliance. If you're watching on the YouTube channel right now, just look over his right shoulder. Maybe you see that COO Alliance banner. He's the author of multiple books. You've probably heard of some of them. One is called Vivid Vision. Another one is The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs. There's also a book called The Second in Command. He's got a book, Double Double, and others. He's famously known as the former COO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK and helped them scale from $2 million a year to over $106 million, from 14 to 3,100 employees in 6 years, which kind of just makes my head spin. just thinking about them, like we just hit like 60, 70 people and, this is chaos. so you just got a lot of really smart things, to say when it comes to scaling a business. Obviously, a lot of people call him the COO whisperer. So second in command, all that stuff, COO Alliance, very good at training your number two. And has a lot of good content, a lot of good books that have done really well. So this is going to be a fun interview. We're going to unpack a bunch of different things. But Cameron, welcome. Great to have
you here. Thanks, Chandler. Nice to see you again as well. I appreciate this too.
Yes, it has been a hot minute. I think that when we originally met, I want to say, is probably when I was volunteering at Mastermind Talks, at the second ever Mastermind Talks.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if you knew this, Cameron. That used to be my hustle when I was just getting started. Is I couldn't afford to go to the event, so I just reach out to the organizer and say, "Hey, I'll sweep the floors, I'll run the mics, I'll pick up speakers from the airport, like whatever you need me to do, I'll do it." And so that's how I got into the second ever Mastermind Talks with Jason, and then I'm pretty sure that's where we met.
That's kind of amazing memory. Yeah, that is where we met, because I remember talking to you when you were starting Self-Publishing School, and you had like 4 or 5 employees, and I was wowed then. But it's been amazing to watch your growth.
My son,
20, is kind of following in your footsteps and is trying to break into these mastermind communities in the same way, to kind of absorb and grow. He went to his first Genius Network event a couple of years ago and got his mind blown. So that's cool that you remember that. Yeah, that's I went to the first 5 Mastermind Talks events, and my sister went to the last 5. So we've got all 10 covered over the Harold family.
Christy, oh, she's awesome. Yeah. Well, and just while we're on the story time, and then I promise, guys, we'll dive into the questions and talk book stuff, is I'm now remembering, as you say this, I remember harassing you, trying to convince you to take us on as a client, like probably 5 years ago. Yeah. And you're like, "Your business is not big enough." I'm like, "Hey, but we will be the best client ever."
I remember.
That's so funny.
Well, I think it's important, like for anybody who is listening as well, to remember that you have been involved in mastermind communities and getting coaching. I have been involved in mastermind communities and getting coaching. I have a coach today. I've gone to 7 different mastermind groups over the years, some of them for 5 to 7 years each. I'm going to my 8th Genius Network event in a month. So it's important to invest in yourself and to invest in your growth. And you know, when people are looking up to you as a business leader, they forget that you're still learning from other people too, as am I, right? We're never the smartest person in the room.
I agree. Yeah. If you are the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Wrong room.
Right. Well, let's talk books. Why books, Cameron? You've obviously done, gosh, what, 6 at this point?
Yeah. I had no desire to be a writer. I sucked in English. In fact, if any of my English teachers knew that I'd ever written a book, they'd be laughing their ass off, because I was terrible in writing, terrible in English. I'm a very good speaker. I've been paid to speak on 27 countries stages, been, you know, paid to speak in person in 27 countries. So I'm good at speaking, terrible at writing. One of my speakers bureaus back in 2009 or 2010 It might have even been earlier than that. It was the Lavin Agency out of Toronto and Boston. David Lavin told me if I had a book, he could get me a stronger speaking fee. And I said, well, what do you think you could get me? He said, oh, we could definitely get you $10,000 to $15,000 if you had a book. So I'm like, wow, if you get me 10 to 15 grand, I'll write a book. Done. Anyway, wrote a book. My speaking fees are now 40,000 plus business class travel. I now get 10 to 15,000 for a 1 hour Zoom event. So the book definitely was there as a platform. And then I also realized once I did the book to get higher speaking fees. Once I had the book, I started hearing all these companies saying that they were learning a lot from my books. And I realized it was a really good marketing tool. So the stuff that I should have known, but I wasn't exposed to authors, you know, because I was doing it really as social media was just getting started. I kind of wrote my first book. And then I just saw the opportunity to continue to use it as a brand and a marketing play. So I don't like the process of writing. I find it very hard and very difficult, but I like the result of having a book.
Yeah, it's like the age old quote of I don't like writing, but I like having written.
Yeah.
I like the outcome that comes from it. So I think what's really smart is you've taken the approach of, all right, what's a specific problem that entrepreneurs are facing, and let's write a book on it, and then let's point to that book, and then let's, you know, create talks around it, programs around it, all that stuff. So there's meetings suck. There's the vivid vision. There's the double-double. There's the second in command. Obviously, free PR. I've got that book sitting around here somewhere. I read it. It was awesome. So I love that approach and using that approach to grow the business. Do you feel like the books have helped more on the speaking side of things or more on the generating client side of things? I know it's probably a mix of both.
Both. So the first book, Double Double, I ended up getting it into the bookstores in all the airports and train stations. I ended up passing it out at speaking events. I ended up getting sponsors to pay for the books to be given out at speaking events.
Oh, that's right.
It was very good for brand building. Mm-hmm. I figured out a way to get groups to buy my books or to pay cost for books or to at least let me give them away. So for the last 8 or 9 years, every single speaking event that I've done, every single person in the audience has gotten a book. And at least 50% of the time, I'm being paid $10 for the book. So I'm getting enough cost recovery to even make money as a self-publishing author. What's happened as I started to do more of the books, and I probably should have learned this earlier, was how to embed some marketing content in the book so it becomes a really good lead gen for my businesses themselves. My book, The Second in Command, is easily the best book I've ever written. And it'll be better than Vivid Vision, which is the best seller currently. But The Second in Command has so much really good content, but there's so much good marketing embedded in it that we've been landing pretty much a client a week for the last 6 or 7 months. And my clients are $10,000 to $14,000 lifetime value. So the payback on that book was in the first month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it was because I read a book about podcasting by Paul somebody. I can't remember Paul's last name. Paul Culligan, I think, or Collins. And it was a little bit too much. But like every few pages, it was like, go to this link and get this free thing, or go to here, or join my list. But I realized how much marketing he did in there, even though he gave away a lot of good content. I think it's Paul Culligan. So I kind of stepped back a little bit from that. But I really made sure that I had about 50 members of the COO Alliance. I had quotes from them with their name and their brand, and then it said COO Alliance member. Those are scattered throughout the book.
Cool.
And then I had about 20 or 30 quotes from Second in Command podcast guests that I'd had, you know, Harley Finkelstein from Shopify and the COO of Bumble, and I had their names and in the book. So it became a really good marketing tool without being too cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was something that I learned as well, is that, you know, the reason for writing a book is either because you have a message or because you're trying to drive marketing. If you're trying to drive marketing, you got to have that balancing act between it being a good marketing brochure and a good, mm-hmm. you know, good tools that people want to buy.
That's good. I like that a lot. Let's backtrack a little bit on the speaking gigs and embedding books with that.
Yeah.
How do you do that? You know, okay. You talked about sponsor. Well, there was like three things in there. There was like getting sponsors to pay for a bunch of books.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're embedding, you know, book purchases into every speaking gig that you do.
Can
you kind of break down those things?
So I'll go through the how I get every group to pass out books. I was speaking at an event in Kelowna, and it was called MetaBridge. And I was one of the speakers. Dan Martell was one of the speakers. And the chief marketing officer from Xerox, who Jeffrey Hazlett, was one of the speakers. And I was super excited because I sold 10 of my books from the stage for $20 each cash. I put $200 in my jeans. I'm like, look at me, $200. You know, I can go buy some dinner or something. I don't know what the fuck I was going to do. And Jeffrey handed out 200 copies of his book to everybody in the audience. I'm like, dude, that's a lot. Did they pay you for the books? He's like, no, I happily paid for my books to go out the door. I'm like, that's a lot. And he goes, well, the cost of every book's $3 plus shipping them here was like $1 a book. So $4 a book times 200 people, it cost me $800. I land one client for $20,000. I was like, oh, I did the math really quickly. I'm like, I need to get books to everybody. So what I started to do is I would land a speaking event. In those days, I was being paid $20,000 for an event. I'd land the event, I'd send them the email confirming, and then 3 days later, I would send them a quick email, and it was kind of like, aw, gee, shucks. And I was like, hey, I totally forgot to ask you, how many people will be at your event? They would email me back, 300. So I would email them back, how about I send you a copy of my new book for every person in the audience, 300 people, I'll give them to you for $10 each, including shipping. My cost was $3 plus $1, so I was making $6 gross margin. Half of the groups would say yes to that. Sure, we'll give you $10 for 300 people, that's $3,000. So I slide $3,000 into my jeans. The other half of the group said, nope, can't do it. So I would go back to them and say, how about I do it for $5 a book, including shipping? I barely make a penny, but let's give everybody a book. And about 25% would say yes to that. So now I've got everybody getting a book. I'm making $1 a book. The other 25% that said, dude, we have no fucking money left. Like, we're literally scrambling just to get you here. I said to them, my gift, I'm sending a copy to everybody in the audience. I really want to blow everybody away. Let's do a book signing afterwards. And they were floored. So over the course of all my events, I was making about $2.50 per book, but everybody at every event was always getting a book. That was my little model. It was kind of the odd gee shucks approach. Then I found that there were a couple of really, really cool companies out there that wanted my clients as clients. One of them was a guy named Max Hansen from a company called Y Scouts. And Y Scouts was a very strong executive recruiting firm that typically did C-level roles, and they really wanted to focus on COOs as their target audience. He was president of his YPO chapter. He was in EO. He was just a great executive search firm that was proven. So I said to Max one day, I've got this group that doesn't want to pay me for books. How about you pay me $5,000 and I'll put your Y Scout sticker and phone number on every book. And then I will mention you in my speaking event as the sponsor of this event. Max was like, done. Because if he lands one client, he makes 30, 40, 50 grand off of that, right?
Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right, so if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement.
$5,000 was around. So Max sponsored 7 Vistage events for me, the Vistage All City events with like 500-700 people. I charged him $5,000 for every event, and he was getting his book out into thousands of people. Just yesterday, I had a CEO from California who saw me speak in Austin, Texas at a Vistage event 10 years ago. He held up the copy of Double Double with a Y Scout sticker on it. Mm-mm. So that was the other part of the process for me, was at least, but again, for me, it was everyone in the audience needs to get a copy of my book.
Wow, that's cool. I like that.
The reason I didn't embed it in the initial quote was it made the price higher. For me, it had to be the upsell or the cross sell or the add-on, mm-hmm. right? As you do in a funnel. I didn't want to charge you for my speaking and my travel and my books because it made me too expensive. But if I just did speaking, then I can sell you the books later.
Got it. That's super smart. That makes a lot of sense. Now, on the subject of speaking, I mean, you obviously do a ton of speaking, or do slash have done a ton of speaking. Yeah. and, you know, your fee has gone up a bunch. How do you book so many speaking gigs? Like, what's the secret? Like, how do you do it?
So there are a couple parts to that. One is, and this isn't a brag or a humble brag, I had the publisher of Forbes magazine, so Rich Karlgaard, who's like the publisher of the actual print magazine and the online world, on video in front of a speaking event, said I was the number one business speaker he's ever seen. So I'm a very good speaker. I'm shitty at selling from the stage. I really should learn from the people who can really good and sell back a room. And I'm bad at that, but I deliver really good content. And I think people really liked the fact that I delivered really good content. That was number one. Secondly, I got very lucky in that I left 1-800-GOT-JUNK 16 years ago, right as the Facebook was starting. So I had the first Facebook account at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. People thought I was crazy. But I started my coaching and speaking as Facebook was growing. So I started leveraging Facebook and Twitter. I think I was member number 204,000 on LinkedIn. Like, I was very early on social media. And I'm a bit of a self-promoter that way. You know, I have no pride or shame on sharing my stuff to get more stuff. So I just kept talking about speaking and sharing videos from speaking and that kind of thing. I think there's people out there that can learn it and do it better maybe than I even have. But yeah, that's all I did. I just shared lots and talked lots and did a good job when I was there. Mm. I also was good at understanding that it was going to be easier for me to build my brand from speaking to an event and getting paid something than it was going to be for me to spend money on marketing. And I was willing to throw my body at the wall. So it was hard. I traveled a lot. One year, I think 2010, I did 80 paid speaking events, you know, and I had kids who were 8 and 6. So it kind of sucked for that. I'm doing a lot more now over Zoom. I've done video speaking now for about 9 years, which has been really good, being able to interact. COVID allowed people to feel comfortable with having a speaker and a fireside chat and delivering over video. That's been really good for me to be able to deploy. But I used to like hop on planes and go to Australia for 5 days, which was insane.
Wow. Are most of your speaking requests historically, have those been inbound or outbound?
Oh, all inbound.
All inbound.
Yeah. And I've recently done stuff like I was in Egypt in December. So I reached out to the EO and the YPO chapters in Egypt, said, hey, I'm going to be there for 3 weeks. This is the weeks I'm in Cairo. Do you want to book me? And they booked me. Did the same with Barcelona, did the same with Dubai. So I'm proactively being opportunistic about places that we are going to be in because we travel. But yeah, it's very largely inbound.
Cool. And where are most of these people, like the inbound opportunities? Is that from speaking gigs you've done previously, from your books? Like where do most of those inbound opportunities come from?
Me sharing on social media and saying, if your group wants to book me, drop me a note. Me mentioning while I'm doing a speaking event that groups like yours have booked me. And if you're a members of other trade associations, et cetera, I did have a couple of speakers bureaus that were good and that booked me as well. You know, Vistage booked me for, I think, 12 or 13 of their big all city events and executive summits. The Entrepreneurs Organization and YPO have booked me for dozens and dozens of events. So once you get known, they kind of spread the ideas. Yeah, some of the speakers bureaus, when my fees got big enough, speakers bureaus like to book you because they can make money. But if your fee is less than 10 grand, they're not going to promote you because they don't make enough.
That makes sense. Interesting. I've never thought about that as an impediment on the speakers bureau side of things.
Oh, here was the other one for me. You know, when I would go to the mastermind talks, I'm very introverted, which people don't recognize because I come off very strong and very confident or lots of energy, but I'm actually quite shy and socially awkward. In fact, I stopped drinking 6 months ago because I was using alcohol as a way to feel comfortable at events. And I wasn't feeling comfortable. I was just being a dick. I was, you know, I would walk on stage with a glass of wine thinking it was funny, but I didn't know how to interact. So what I would do is if I was going to a mastermind talks or baby bathwater or war room, is I would say to Jason from Mastermind Talks, hey, when I'm at your event, if you'd like me to speak, normally I charge 15 grand. How about I speak about my new book and I'll do it for free? And they would say yes to that because then I was a good free speaker. And then I would say, can you put me on the morning of the first day? And that was the way that I would meet a lot of people. So I'd spend 3 days having known them because they would come up to me. So it was a way for me to feel comfortable at an event. I did that with almost every mastermind community that I attended. And I got to speak at almost every mastermind community because of that.
That's interesting.
So I wasn't trying to get paid. I was trying to fit in. It was almost like showing up at a new school in grade six. And I did show and tell as a way to meet the other kids. Mm-hmm. That was the only way I knew how to fit into a group or get to know people in a group. Even mm-hmm. as I'm telling you this, I'm kind of wringing my hands and feeling nervous as I'm explaining it.
Interesting. I think so selfishly, like on this question, like we're at a point now with selfpublishing.com where, you know, I'll speak 10 or 20 times a year. We've started being pretty selective. It's typically the bigger events. And then we're building out a speaking team that, you know, 1, 2, 3 times a week, they'll be speaking at events. But I think the big bottleneck for us is in all of our stuff is outbound pretty much. And it is either free or like as part of some sort of sponsorship. Right. So if you were me or us, how would you solve that? Because I feel pretty confident. And like when I go speak, people are like, this is one of the best talks I've ever seen. Like, so sure. I feel like the product is good, but for whatever reason, the inbound or that maybe it's just our frame that we're used to just saying, hey, we'll come speak for free. Like how would you solve that kind of bottleneck if you were us?
Yeah. And I've told a couple of people in business that, you know, that they should hire a speaker to go and speak at every possible event they could and price the speaking fee at $3,000 plus travel, which every group can afford. It's priced low enough that every group can afford the $3,000 plus travel. And then I said, hire a 25 to 27 year old female who looks and feels like a 32 to 34 year old so that she doesn't look like a kid. Females can actually interact with the groups better. They build trust better and pay them the actual speaking fee. So if they get the $3,000, pay them the $3,000. You've got their travel, but also pay them 10% or 5% of the backer room sales that they generate for you. So they become this outbound salesperson that's really in the field and teach them how to generate more sales. But get into the Vistage community, get into the EO community, get into the YPO community, say yes to every conference, talk to all the trade shows, get in with the, you know, American Society of Association executives. But if you can just have cost recovery for their travel and that pays their base salary, if they're doing 2 events per month, which is only 1 every 2 weeks, they're making $6,000. That's 72 grand a year just to be on the road, plus 10% of sales. Maybe 3 events a month, they're making 100 grand. Like, that's a good amount of money for a 26, 27 year old
right.
plus sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would be approaching it. And I would price it at like $3,000 plus travel because it's a throwaway number for even the smallest events. $5,000 plus travel, they'll even do. When it's $10,000, I would be like, for you to go, have you got kids now?
No, not yet.
So even for you, like for you to leave your office and get on a plane, it's, you know, an hour to get to the airport, time sitting in the airport, your travel time, going to the hotel, doing an AV check. You got to be $25,000 plus travel to make it worth your while, even though right. there's a lot of backer room sales.
Right.
So I would price yourself high so that they say no, but you give them option number 2, which is this amazing person, and then have some video of them on stage that shows, like, market them as a great speaker, and you win. That's what Simon Sinek has been doing now for 7 years. Simon mm-hmm. used to sleep on my couch years ago when we were building Got Junk. He was on our board of advisors way before he wrote his book, Start With Why. Simon's speaking costs got well over $100,000 about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And he started having people go on the road for him for $10,000 plus travel. Mm-hmm. That's how he was doing it, was paying mm-hmm. the junior people. And he made himself so expensive that everybody said, no, but it was like, no, but no, we won't pay yeah. you, but yes, we'll take Fred.
Yeah. Cool. I like that a lot. That's super smart. Well, I'll ask a couple more questions on the book stuff and then we'll wrap. So, man, I got more questions in time. I want to learn about the, Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs book, yeah, and specifically your experience as an author. So what was your experience writing a book in a series? And was that harder or easier than other books that you've written? And, you know, just kind of lessons learned from that experience.
Well, this is another reason why you join mastermind communities, is because you bump into smart people that are doing some really cool stuff. I was at a Genius Network event, probably my third year being a member. I'd written about three books by that point. I went to the bathroom at a break. I guess I have a lot of book bathroom stories. I was coming back from the bathroom and Hal Elrod, who was the founder of the Miracle Morning first book, grabbed me and said, "Hey, I'm doing a couple of books around the Miracle Morning concept. I'm going to do one for real estate agents and one for salespeople. Would you like to co-author the one about entrepreneurs?" And I was like, yeah. It's kind of like when you go to a gas station and you've got like Tim Hortons and Wendy's and like the gas station in one place, like I'll partner with your great brand. Yeah. And so I just said yes. And he had a fee to do it. And then he was going to write half the book about kind of the savers concept. And I was going to write the other half of the book about how to apply the savers and some other principles that work for entrepreneurs. So it was just a leveraging his brand with my brand in both of our communities. It was a full body hell yes. Hal is also out of the Cutco community, and I had a lot of respect for people that had been in and around the Cutco community. I have some good, were you Cutco, by the way?
I'm student painters, your college pro, you're right? Student,
okay. Yeah, yeah, student painters, college pro painters, Cutco. I had a lot of respect for those people, and Hal was from that community as well. So it was a full body hell yes. His process was very similar. Just get me the content. We'll polish it. We'll package it. We'll make it all work. So I didn't have to be the one dealing with a lot of the logistics. So that's why I did it and how we did it.
That's cool. I love that. Any lessons learned from that process, or how was that different than other books that you wrote?
Here's the lessons from my other five books. Like when I wrote Double Double, I kind of self-authored it. And what I did was I created the reason for the book. Then I created a table of contents. Like what are the chapters for the book going to be? Then I created what I called like a table of contents for every chapter. Like what are the 5 or 7 points for chapter one? What are the 5 or 7 points for chapter two, et cetera. And then I used Dragon Dictation and a Bluetooth headset. Remember, this was 2009. And I walked around my home talking all of my content until it was transcribed. Then I passed that content to a writer who was in Sweden. I used, I think it was called Elance or Upwork back in the day. And she polished it and made it look good. Then I sent each chapter to three different entrepreneurs and asked them what I was missing. Like, tell me the other shit I was missing. Then I talked that content out and had her polish it. Then I sent the rough chapter to an editor who rewrote it for me and made it look good. And she was a freelancer. Then I handed it to Greenleaf Books. So I kind of did I just couldn't sit down and type it. Right. But I knew if I could talk the content out, I could get it onto a Word document really, really quickly. And then I could edit it.
Cool. I like it. We'll go lightning round with a couple final questions. First, yeah, one, we got a question from a listener. So we're trying something new. This one's from Leo. Says, you helped scale the business, 1-800 got jumped from 2 million to over 100 million. What would you say are the most important leadership principles entrepreneurs need to embrace in order to successfully scale up past 100 million?
Great question. Number one is the leader's core job is to grow people, right? So our job is to grow people's skills and grow their confidence. Next one is to really over-communicate and always communicate the vision and the culture, not how we're going to make it come true, but make sure people know where we're going and why we're going there, and let your team figure out the how. Third one is to delegate, delegate, delegate. And if you keep saying to yourself, well, my team can't do it, great, delegate to them anyway and grow them so they can do it, right? Our job is to grow people and keep giving, like our to-do list doesn't have to be done by us. Those would be my three cores, I think.
That's great. I love those. Guys, if you want to submit a question for a future guest, just comment on our YouTube channel with your question or put it in a review on the podcast. We'd love to ask your question to some of our future guests. Cameron, this has been awesome. I've really enjoyed this. Where can people go to find out more about you, to buy your books, the COO Alliance, or whatever would be most helpful for them?
Yeah, all of my 6 books are available on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. If they go to the COOalliance.com, they'll learn about our mastermind community, which is exclusively for the second in command. No entrepreneurs are allowed to join. And then the CameronHerold.com, it's HEROLD.com, has all the rest of the links for everything else.
Love it. I was just typing it in. So COOalliance.com. Check it out. Check out the books. Cameron, you're the man. Thank you.
Thanks, Chandler. Great seeing you again, man. Really happy for all the success you're having as well.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do 3 things right now if you found this episode helpful. All right, number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right, reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.